right, we are back on the Flexit.com T-Talk podcast. My name is Stefan Huer, back from West Virginia. I'm sure we're going to talk about that. A couple of stories coming out of that weekend. Here with my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scotty, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you back.
Yeah, it feels good to be back. You know, you're in a foreign country for a week, and West Virginia is definitely a different state. Never been to something like that, but you know, the Southern people, they are so sweet down there.
Yeah, they are. I've been to West Virginia a couple of times, a couple of golf trips, actually, yep. Which, you know, unfortunately, you didn't get to play when you were down there. Or did you? I don't know.
I had zero interest at that point. All right. It was so hot, Scott. I mean, I don't know if people want this visual, but I was sweating. No. It started at my head and went to my ankles, and it was real hot. I had to get the bucket hat going. I think you saw that maybe on TV at a couple points.
Yeah, not because of you guys, I don't think.
Sadly, but we were on there. But had to get the bucket hat going because it was steaming out there. It was awesome. Great weather. Yeah. Not a lot of food options in West Virginia. I don't know what they're known for. One of the guys driving us from the caddy parking to the course, like, where should I eat around here? And he said the Pizza Hut was really good. So
that didn't give you a lot of hope, did it?
No, at that point I was feeling like maybe he didn't know what was going on, and I wasn't going to spend $100 at the Greenbrier restaurant.
No, I mean, you should tell people why you were at the Greenbrier, and I mean, we'll get to it more during the show, but obviously you were down there caddying.
Yeah, I was down there caddying for actually our guest this week, Martin Trainer. We linked up at the Canadian Open. I'm sure we've talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah,
maybe
a
once
couple
or
of
twice.
Times.
We don't mention his name too often by any stretch. So I was down there caddying for him. It was a good week. He asked me to come back. Awesome week, awesome guy, and we're going to bring him back on. He's actually currently writing an article for one of the golf publishers out there, just about life on tour, his first year on tour, and we're going to really break that down at some point. But just an awesome week, and I was really excited to get the chance to go back out there on the tour.
On the tour. You're a tour caddy now. You can upgrade your Instagram and your Twitter profile from caddy one time to multiple times now.
Yeah, twice now. But it was quite the week. Yeah. Obviously, we started off really well on the Thursday. Friday had a couple bad breaks, a couple bad bounces that didn't go our way, and we just couldn't recover. But one guy that did play really, really well in our group on Friday was Kevin Chappell.
He did okay.
10 months after his last tour event, he had back surgery, 10 months ago or 11 months ago. First event back on the PGA Tour, and he decides, why don't I throw it a little 59 out there? And it was something to watch, that's for sure.
I mean, have you ever witnessed, I mean, you probably have not, 9 birdies in a row? Or, I mean, what were you thinking when you saw this happening? I mean, at first, I'm sure, you know, it's just another PGA Tour player making a few birdies in a row. And then what?
Well, that was the thing. I don't think I even realized, or any of us realized, until about his fifth one. I think it was when Martin dropped that bomb on 15. It was about a 55-60 footer for birdie. And Kevin still had about 20 feet, and he makes the bomb right after. And I look at him, I go, I guess your birdie's not that cool anymore, because he's just made, I don't know, it must have been 6 in a row at that point. And then Martin pulls out the card. He's got no numbers down. He's like, well, that's easy. Just birdie, 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 birdie all the way across. And then at that point, we were just absolutely rooting for him at that point, watching everything. The one on 9, I think, is the most impressive. It took us probably half an hour to play 9. Unfortunately, we had a couple rules issues. And he was standing up there. He was sitting on that birdie putt on 9, which would have been 9 in a row for about 20 minutes.
That's,
he was standing
that's,
on the that's
green. Crazy to think of, that he was able to pull that off. I mean, I know if it was me, I mean, or anybody, you'd be sitting there thinking, going, you know, I got to make this 9 in a row. I've got to make this putt. And now I'm ice cold. Somebody's stalling me here. I want to make this putt.
And then for 10 in a row, he comes up just short. Obviously, like, I'm not joking. Like, obviously, people, like, the cameras didn't show up, I believe, until he made his 9th in a row, until we got to the front 9, our back 9, I guess. Then the cameras started showing up, and we can kind of talk about that experience, which is kind of cool. But at that point, you know, nobody was really watching. Cameras started showing up. He easily, I'm not joking, he could have been 56. That's how good this guy was all day. He had a He had a lip out for 58. I don't know if you saw that. Yeah. It was right off the rim.
It's video game golf. When you look at it, I think it's the 11th sub-60 round in PGA Tour history. So, but yeah, it's got to look like video game golf when you're there watching it live.
It just looked like automatic. I don't have his stats in front of me. I actually have nothing in front of me right now. I didn't really prepare. I've been a little busy, I think. I think he maybe have missed one fairway.
Yeah.
I don't think he missed it. There's a couple where he missed the green where he's on the fringe. He still made birdie because he was automatic that day. It was just right down the middle every single time. He actually just paired up this year with Sanjay Im's caddy from last year, Brian. I got his first name off the top of my head right now, which should be a little bit of an easier year for Brian, as I believe Sanjay Im played 67 out of 52 weeks last year.
Yeah.
Something ridiculous.
That's pretty busy.
Yeah, quite busy. So, but Kevin, awesome guy. Clearly had a tough couple years out there and just got back from his medical exemption. And, you know, not the best weekend for him after a 59, but it's really hard to follow those up.
Yeah, it is. And, I mean, for him to come back from injury, do that, that's obviously got to give him some hope that, you know, obviously he's healthy again. You know, he's got lots of weeks to look forward to. I'd be interested to know, I mean, for you guys being out there and playing with him, I mean, how much do you, you know, start just paying attention to what he's doing and sort of lose track of what you guys are doing?
It definitely happened. I think we both realized probably with about four or five left to play, it was pretty much impossible for us to make a cut. I mean, barring a couple hole outs maybe, which unfortunately didn't happen. But Martin, you know, I didn't want to personally start bringing it up, Martin turns to me, he's like, oh, I'm cheering for this.
Yeah, you
got to
defer to your
now.
Boss in that situation.
Exactly,
right?
So there was a couple times where he made a birdie putt, I believe it was on 7, just off the fringe, which got him to 11 under.
Right.
And Martin and I were at the back. We both fist pumped. We both fist pumped. And I, like, we're playing.
Like, come on, like excited little kids.
We're playing with this guy.
You're not spectators.
Yeah.
But you become spectators.
We're at that point, it's like the old saying, we're just trying to get out of the way.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And
you don't want to jinx him, right?
Well, the funny thing is, Kevin, I don't want to call it a run. And I mentioned to you a story. So the previous day, we had a little bit of an issue on the back nine. And we were a little bit flustered and getting a little bit confused of where I was supposed to be. And to be honest, I mean, yeah, like you can call me a PGA Tour caddy, but
a rookie.
I know what I am. Yeah. I'm a rookie out there. So I'm a little bit lost. You know, sometimes you're used to playing with a range finder. You got a yardage book in your hand and you're trying to take a drop out of a hazard. And there's a lot of chaos and you got to still pay attention. There's two other guys.
Did you have an incident?
There's two other guys in the group, right?
Yeah.
These big tour bags, you know, usually see guys.
Yeah, 40 pounds.
The 40, 50. They leave them standing upright, right? So there was a flat area. And I should have known right then and there that the old saying.
You know, West Virginia's a mountainous state.
Yeah,
right?
Well, the course is pretty flat. But, compared to Hamilton, of course.
Yeah.
You know, no bag laying down can fall over. This one wasn't laying down, and right before he was about to dress his ball, Kevin Trappel, the bag fell over, and then he looks over at me, and he had to step off, obviously. He's like, are you good? And I was like, I'm so sorry. He's like, no, like, it's all good. Like, are you good right now? Am I good to go? He's like, you're good. I mean, at that point, I felt terrible. I obviously thought about it for like 3-4 holes.
Sure.
And, you know, I feel bad for Martin because, like, he's trying to play, and he's sometimes I'm sure he's like, look at this idiot that I have out here. I got Happy Gilmore's caddy out here with me. But no, Kevin was an awesome guy, start to finish both rounds. We also played with Patton Kizzire, just a hilarious guy. I believe it was 3-4 holes into our second day. As you said, Martin didn't start well. Patton started worse.
Right.
And Patton turns to Martin and goes, I really wish we were playing match play today so I could go in the clubhouse at 10 and have a beer. but he trooped it out, making jokes the whole way, just having a good time. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think both of the guys realized, hey, we're just out here witnessing history. And that's cool.
I mean, at least they had some entertainment. I mean, that tipping point is pretty difficult. I've been on the bag a couple of times for a couple different things, not on the PGA Tour, but, you know, for other players on lower level tours. But, you know, knowing you're not going to make the cut, you kind of get to that certain point and, you know, it's a little bit of despair, unfortunately. You know you're not going to get those extra days in. You know you're not going to get paid a little bit extra as well. You're not going to be there for that weekend. And sometimes that's difficult just to get into the clubhouse.
Yeah, it was. But we luckily we had something.
Something to watch. Yeah. Yeah, something really good to watch. Yeah, that's for sure.
We had something to watch, and it was entertaining. And all the best to both those guys. Kevin, I think he's going to get it back together. It was actually really one thing I did notice that you wouldn't see out there is, so the first day, his wife walked the whole round watch. Second day, she only watched like the first four holes and then she left.
Okay.
And it's pretty funny considering like the day he shoots 59, she wouldn't even watch. She might have went shopping. There's a lot of things to do at the green bar. Yeah. She's probably like, whatever.
He's off to do his job.
Yeah, so she missed the 59, but I'm sure they talked about it later, but interesting resort, that's for sure, the Greenbrier. It's a lot of old money feeling, that's for sure.
It is. It's not a economically priced place. Let's put it that way. Very spectacular. It's got some neat things. They have the bunker there. I don't know if you got to tour around. Did you go to the bowling alley or anything?
No. They're pretty. Security's pretty tight around the Greenbrier when the players are there. They don't really.
The caddies don't have carte blanche to get in the.
Unless you're paying to stay there, you don't really get in there. And I was. My budget didn't have the Greenbrier.
Oh, you weren't staying there?
No, did not stay anywhere close to there. Actually, stayed about half an hour away in the little town of Clifton Forge with another fellow caddy, my buddy Andrew, who's out there with Cameron Davies. Great guy, so shout out to him. And yeah, we had a great time in the little town of Clifton Forge, that was in Virginia. In Virginia.
Yeah.
It's confusing. It's all good. But no, it was a good week. We had fun, obviously, something to come out. We had a 20-year-old winner come out.
Yeah. Joaquin Niemann, I mean, first Chilean to win on the PGA Tour. This is a player that showed a lot of potential. Wins by six, which is incredible. And now he's certainly going to be up on the international President's Cup points list. He's certainly going to be somebody that, you know, their captain, Ernie Els, is going to be looking at to join their squad, possibly, if he can continue this run and continue to play well.
Yeah, pretty cool. I didn't see much of the golf after. I had a long drive home, about an 11-hour drive home on Saturday and Sunday. Pretty much just wanted to watch some football and get away from golf for a couple days. So I didn't get to see it, but awesome to watch. This kid's a player for sure. Did you see the interaction with him and his caddy after social media?
I did not, unfortunately. I was sort of distracted by that other event that was going on earlier, and then I kind of had some other things to do. Like, I think I had a water tank blow up in my basement and stuff like that. So unfortunately, I didn't see that.
Hot water talk on the Tea Talk podcast.
Yeah, so what happened?
He's obviously won, and his, you know, the caddies, these guys like to celebrate. So he comes out, his caddy's clearly had a couple beers, and he's meeting him at the outside the front entrance, and he's like, "Hey, what are you drinking there?" And he's like, "I'm drinking a beer." And he's clearly had a few. They're chit-chatting or whatever. He's like, "All right, I'll see you at 8 a.m. And he's like, "Well, if you're seeing me at 8 a.m., you're carrying your own clubs tomorrow."
Oh, my.
It was a funny little exchange. I'm sure they were just jesting at each other, but it was a cool little thing. And as you mentioned, the Solheim Cup was on the weekend. What an awesome event, I assume.
It was pretty incredible. It was the 16th time the Solheim Cup has been played, and Europe managed to squeak it out 14.5 to 13.5, and it came down to the last putt. It had all the drama you would want from a team event. Spectators, they had tons of those. 90,000 plus. Visit Scotland came out with the numbers the next day. Crowd was great. There was a lot of quality play. A few people talked about some of the play not being as great. My point a little bit was, the weather on the second day was a little rough as far as wind and stuff. And people also have to understand, and it was something I explained on a radio interview that I was on Saturday, is that we're getting to see every single shot. And if people went out and actually watched tour events and saw every single shot, they would find out it doesn't look like a highlight package.
It does
not.
I think that's the biggest thing that people don't know is that like one thing, I saw Keegan Bradley top a ball on the driving range. Like, these guys screw up.
Oh yeah.
It happens. I saw a couple. Martin was actually screwing around on the one. He was pretending he was hitting his chips too far, like kind of over the putting green.
Did he skull one or something?
No, he was just doing it on purpose. And but I actually saw one guy, I don't even know who it was, couple accidental skulls out there. Like,
yeah.
These guys are really good, but the things you see on TV are the made putts. You see the good shots. You don't see the guy that is playing for the cut.
Right. So what happens is, you know, and I mentioned when I was doing that interview on Saturday, you know, when people watch the Ryder Cup in Paris, they saw some shots. They were like, whoa, what is that? But you know what? It happens. So really, overall, though, you know, it was quality play. Celine Boutier and Georgia Hall played great for Europe. They got 4 points each. The Korda sisters are fantastic for the U.S. They picked up 3.5 points each. And, you know, I couldn't really get away quick enough when some people were on social media and there was a post. I think golf.com had it. I hate to throw them under the bus, but they were one of the ones that had it. Like, what went wrong for Team USA? It's like, really? Really? It came down to one putt. I mean,
yeah.
You know, not a lot went wrong. Yes,
are they going to get a what was it? The Ryder Cup had a while ago, like a secret team. Fix the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
I forget what they called it.
But yeah, I mean, there's not a task force.
We don't need
a task force on it or whatever. They played well. There was a great press conference afterwards where, you know, Julie Inkster and the Quarters, they talked about the fact of what a great opportunity the event was to showcase golf. And, you know, I had a discussion with somebody else and they said, oh, you know, it's really great for women's golf. No, it was great for golf. It really drew some eyeballs, got a lot of people very impressed and with how those players played. And for Suzanne Pettersen to make that putt and to, like, drop the mic and retire right then was pretty impressive. I mean, for her to come back, play four events on the LPGA, not really have much form at all, but then to make that winning putt and to, you know, flip around what was looked like it was going to be a European loss,
yeah,
and to turn it into a win was quite the way to go out.
Funny thing about that too, I saw that she actually had no plans to retire. It just, she said it felt right. It was a spur of the moment decision. Will she be back because it was a spur of the moment decision? Do you think
I don't think so.
The allure of the tournament took over and made that happen, or do you think this is
no? I don't think so. I mean, if you look at it, she's won, you know, she won 14 times on the LPGA Tour, 7 times on the Ladies European Tour, picked up $15 million. She'd been a pro for, you know, 18 years. It's time for her. She, you know, she's got a family now. She's got out of it what she wants. It'll be sad for the fans. I've managed to see her live a few times, play some events, and got a couple interviews with her over the years, one at a Nike event, another one at a Women's Open. A real competitor, that's for sure. And she'll definitely be missed in the game. She was missed in the game before, you know, she came back and played the four events this year. And it was nice enough that one of those events was the CP Women's Open here in Canada. And she is a past champion in Canada. But I think this is it for her. And, you know, she's doing it on her own terms, much like Lorena Ochoa did or Annika did. And that's the greatest way for an athlete to go out, not to be carried off the field, to, you know, to take themselves off the field.
And on an absolute high, her quote that she said to the media after was that nothing will ever beat this. So I think I can just say enough is enough. And that's what she told her husband after. Pretty cool. Pretty cool way to go out. I hope that's actually how she goes out. The worst is when people do this and then they're like, I kind of miss it. Like, for example, like Andrew Luck has retired earlier this year. I don't think anybody actually believes that's going to last. I think he probably is just sick of the injuries and he's going to come back. But, you know, what can you do? But I think, you know, she's 38. She's still young in the golf world.
She is, that's for sure. But, I mean, you know, people have to realize if you've dedicated basically for her 38 years of her life, you know, which, you know,
28 years probably of competitive golf,
right? So I mean, she's dedicated that to the game of golf. I mean, these people have other interests, so you know, just because we want them to be out there doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be out there. And I don't think people should be too surprised, especially where the money is now on some of the tours. And I'm not saying the money is excessive as far as the women's game is concerned. But, you know, if you look at the men's game or so forth, you're not going to necessarily see players, you know, batting it out for as long as they possibly can. I mean, you know,
like the difference between this and playing at 38 in the NBA is that only you determine if you get paid, right? And it's like, am I willing to bleed money? I don't have enough time to practice every single day like I used to. You know, my kids are getting older. I kind of want to watch them go through high school or whatever it is, whatever it may be. You know, maybe this is where she's like, hey, you know what? At this point, I can make money doing other things. And, you know, golf is not my life. And and that's a cool thing. I think it's she's had quite the career, as you mentioned, 2-time major champion. 22 wins. I think that's
between LPGA and
15 on the LPGA, which is just crazy. She's quite the player, and I think, yeah, going out on top, which is awesome. But it's probably a good transition to give our boy Martin a call. We're going to chat a lot about, you know, life on tour that you don't see. You know, he's wrapped up that first year. He had the highest of highs earlier and the lowest of lows. And we talked about that last week. And he's, as I mentioned, he's writing an article about that right now. So we'll get some insight of where that article is at and his thoughts and where he's planning on going this year. Because now he's a vet out there. He's year two out on the PGA Tour. He's no longer a rookie. So why don't we head over, give Martin a call, and chat about his rookie season on the PGA Tour and where he's going from here. All right, well, we'd like to welcome back to the podcast one of my bosses, the most important one because he's on the podcast, and my other one doesn't actually listen to this. Martin Trainer, PGA Tour winner. How are you doing this week, man? I miss you. It's been 3 days or 4 days since we've been together.
I'd like to be referred to as Mr. Boss.
Oh, and, nice.
I'm doing great. Thank you. We had a nice little stroll together last week at the Greenbrier.
Yeah, it was a good week. We had a couple holes where we didn't speak to each other, which we it happens, right? You know, it happens. Player caddy relationships.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, sometimes bogeys loom large, but, you know, at least we got to see some fireworks the second round. I don't know if you got into that, but
we literally talked about it.
What a day.
It was. So Scott wanted to know, you know, at what point did we kind of just turn it off and go into spectator mode? And I was talking to him about how, you know, he made that birdie just off the fringe, I believe, on the seventh hole on day two to go to 11 under. And we both kind of fist pumped.
Oh, totally. I mean, you have to root for that. Like, you know, he's literally in our group. I was keeping his card. And yeah, I mean, it was history, I guess, on the PGA Tour. I wonder if that card, this is what I was wondering, is I basically scribbled my name on the card, like on the third hole of the day. Sometimes I do this weird thing where I'm just like, all right, like, let me write down some scores. Okay, he made par, birdie, 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 birdie. Okay, here we are on hole number 16. And, you know, I just signed the card in advance. And, of course, you know, I gave it the worst scribble ever. Because, you know, when you sign a card, it's like marker and player. And so, you know, you have two player signatures. So, you know, Kevin Chappell's card, I just signed my name, you know, whatever. Didn't care. Who cares? Of course, you know, that card will probably go into, like, the World Golf Hall of Fame with my stupid little like scratch scribble. This is my one opportunity to have something lasting in my legacy. The guy who kept Kevin Chappell's 59 card. Nope, just a little weird line with a dot on top.
So you're regretting that now. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, absolutely. Huge regret.
You're going to have to start.
It's going to be like on my deathbed regret.
Are you going to start printing your name on your signature now?
Yeah, well, of course, I'm never going to ever have another 59 card. So like it won't matter. But now, you know, I'm going to have to actually focus and, like, have nice signatures. Maybe I should just, you know, wait until the end like a normal person and, you know, do a proper signature.
What's your lowest round? I never really thought about that. I don't think we asked you that before at the Buffalo Wild Wing. I mean, not necessarily on tour, but any time.
I mean, you know, at Buffalo Wild Wings, like, who knows what goes on there? You don't always get to all the questions that you imagine.
True.
I shot a 61 in, I think it was first stage of Q School a couple years ago. And then I think I've shot, but see, okay, can we fix this whole system of, like, what's your lowest score? It's like,
what's the most par under par?
You sometimes get, yeah. 70. Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's so silly because
so you shot
like,
61,
oh, well,
but it was par 75. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It should have been a 59. They gotcha. Robbed me. No, I mean it's crazy because, like, I always love when it's a par 70. Like Greenbrier was a par 70, and it's, you know, it's a relatively easy course.
Yeah, would you call announcers... it a short long course, or you described it? It used to be a long course, and now it's a short. I forget how you worded it.
And it's not the first 59 shot there either. I mean, obviously, yeah. Stuart Appley shot 59.
Oh, right. Oh, wow. I didn't even put the two and two together. Yeah, it's kind of a short. ish. Well, it's like probably a formerly long course that's now a short course kind of thing. And they tried to lengthen it, but like, you know, you're a little bit at altitude. It's 90 degrees and the fairways are rolling. So like, you know, Corey Pavin's hitting it like 310. But
nice reference. I like that. Good pull there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I watched a lot of Golf Channel when I was like 13. That was he was a big deal back then. What were we talking about?
Oh, love you know it. The amount of times that him and I were talking on the golf course where we're literally in a conversation like this and I would say something and he'd turn to me and go, what were you talking about? And I would say, what we were just talking about a second ago when you just spoke.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. The same thing
what,
here.
What were you guys talking about
4 seconds ago?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What did you guys talk about down there? I didn't get all the scoop from Stefan. He told me a few things, but, you know, what's your perspective on the second time caddy now?
Oh, well, Stefan, I mean, he's a solid caddy. I mean, this is what we talked about a little bit before I forgot what we were talking about. But, you know, he's sort of a, like, he's just such a jovial guy and happy to be there. And to me, that's like one of my top priorities for a caddy is like someone who's just pleasant to be around. Nice. Because ultimately, like, I'm doing this crazy thing called playing on the PGA Tour, which, you know, not a lot of people get to do. And like, it's frankly like an amazing experience. And so having like a grouchy caddy to me is like the worst thing ever. Cause like, you know, first and foremost, like I'm enjoying my life. And, you know, obviously it's a job and all that, but like, it was just fun having Stefan on because he was, you know, he's just enjoying and I was trying to do that too. You know, obviously I went a little zero dark 30 on him when I started making bogeys and realized I was going to miss the cut. But it was really cool just watching, you know, that 59 with Kevin Chappell with them, you know.
My favorite moment was when I think we both realized the cut was long gone at this point, and I turned to you and go, you were asking me what podcasts earlier. Are there any you're listening to lately? And there was just radio silence from your end, and I just turned to you and go, I'll talk to you on the next hole.
Oh my god, I don't even remember that. Yeah, it was a dark, dark moment there for me, you know.
It happens.
But I came around eventually. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Especially, like, you know, golf is just the worst because your expectations just change, like, instantly. It's like, I've been playing so badly all summer, like, just missing every single cut. And now, finally, like, I put a good round together in the first round. It's like, I should be celebrating that. It's like, oh, like, you know, I feel like I've turned the corner here. Good things are coming up ahead. Like, that in and of itself is good news. And then of course it's like, yeah, but I also want to make the cut. It's like, and then of course expectations shift and then, you know, the disappointment comes if it doesn't work out. But yeah, went a little dark there for a while.
Oh, it's all good. You're still a great guy. That's all that matters. The one thing we talked about, and you're writing an article right now. Is it for golf.com or Golf Channel?
It's going to be considered for golf, or golfmagazine.com. Yeah.
Golfmagazine.com. And it's basically just, you know, your first year out on the tour. And you kind of experienced the highest of highs early on, you know, picking up a win and then, the lowest of lows with kind of 10 or 11 missed cuts in a row to finish the season. Looking back on the entire year, where's your head at? What are you thinking about now? What's going into this article at this point?
I mean, it was just such a roller coaster year, as you said. And, you know, I got to experience just some unbelievable things. I mean, just even like the contrast between, you know, the very first event where I was just so excited to be there and frankly, like floored that I was competing in the same tournament as like, you know, X, Y, and Z player. Like, you know, I think I was in Napa for my first event and it was like Sunday afternoon before the tournament. Like the tournament hadn't even started, you know, it was like well before the tournament. And, you know, there's a couple guys that got there early, first tournament, whatever. And like, I remember seeing Jason Duffner and I was like, oh my God, Jason Duffner. Like, I don't know, like when the last time Jason Duffner was like finished in the top 10, but, like, it was just so incredible. It was like, I couldn't believe it. You know what I'm saying? Like, cause you know, my sort of identity and my expectations are set at, you know, I'm a professional golfer, but you know, obviously I don't play on the PGA Tour or anything, you know. It's like, that's what I've been saying to everyone for years, right? Yeah. And so that's sort of where I was at.
And then you're there all of a sudden.
And then all of a sudden it's like, there they are. It's like, there's Phil. I'm like, what? That's Phil. You know, so that was pretty crazy. And then, you know, obviously as the year went along, like the win was just, I mean, it's just like, I still can't believe it. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, I still, even despite playing on tour, it was like, oh, right. But, you know, I'm just a guy that made it to the tour. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not one of these top guys. And then, you know, to win the tournament. And now I guess I'm going to Kapalua. I think I'm like the poorest person to ever play at Kapalua. That is a fact.
Hey, I might be the poorest person to ever caddy there if you ask me to come.
Oh, dude, you are not even bottom like 1,000 caddies. These caddies, can you imagine some of the stories from these guys, like from the tour, especially back in the 70s? Like, these guys, yeah, literally living. It's like they wish they could have lived in their cars because they like didn't have one.
Yeah,
you know,
the Loopers movie that's finally out now on iTunes and stuff, it really kind of shows the difference that you actually can make a living out there. I'm lucky enough that when I get to come out with you, I have a full-time job, so it's like I really get to enjoy it because it's just, yeah, another, it's a weekend on the PGA Tour and I have smiles on my face. I'm not really, you know, if we make the cut, it's an extra bonus, but I'm not too worried about it. You know what I mean? But these guys, as you said, they wish they could live in their cars. They're hitchhiking with other caddies to hope to get to the next event, even back in the day.
Yeah. It's a tough life, man. And like these guys that are out on the, you know, Corn Ferry Tour or, you know, Canadian Tour or whatever, and they're just out there trying to get back. The saddest one is like guys who go to the Monday qualifiers of the Corn Ferry Tour. And I'm always just like, man, like, what is your plan? Is your plan to get on a bag of a guy who Mondays gets his card on the Corn Ferry Tour and then gets his tour card, and then you're going to be with him the whole time? Like, man, that is a...
Yeah, that's a big stretch.
That's
there.
A plan
that is,
right,
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
May as well put that money into lottery tickets each week.
Yeah, no, lottery is a way better investment.
So what's it like for you now? I mean, you know, we talked to you in the middle of the year and you're, you know, in the midst of, you know, still struggling a little bit, but, you know, do you do anything? Do you change anything as far as how you're approaching the game or, you know, how are you working your way out of this?
Yeah, I mean, you're always working and tinkering and trying to figure it out. You know, I had a stretch where I sort of, you know, lost my game a little bit and, you know, couldn't find fairways and you know, wasn't hitting great iron shots. And so, you know, you sort of make adjustments and, you know, you go back to what worked before and you try to figure that out. But, I mean, the second year I'm hoping is going to be a little bit smoother than the first year. You know, you're trying to just get to know the courses and, like, everything's just, you know, deer in the headlights from seeing Jason Duffner on a Sunday afternoon hitting 10-foot putts. And, you know, it's like, what, you know, between then and now, I've learned so much and I've played these courses and, you know, I sort of figured out the routine a little bit and how to be successful. And obviously having one and having the 2-year exemption helps a lot because, you know, the sense of urgency isn't there. I can, you know, work reasonably hard, but at the same time, you know, I'm not dying to, you know, grinding to make the cut. I mean, I remember, you know, when I was on the Corn Ferry and I was trying to get my card, it was like every single week was like, you know, wake up, practice, you know, play a bunch, then afterwards practice again. And I was like Sungjae Im out there. I was like, man, like me and Sungjae, like kings of work ethic. And then now, you know, I can sort of relax a little bit and you know, draw a little bit more from experience rather than you know, hitting like a million shots from 80 yards.
Well, one thing you've obviously did differently this year, which I we didn't actually talk, but I assume it's the first time you've probably done since you turned pro is you went on vacation after the season ended. You got away from golf, and you went to Europe for a few weeks with the girlfriend, saw some family. Like, how was that, just getting away from golf for a while?
Oh, it was so great. I actually felt the difference when I was playing last week at the Greenbrier. Like, you know, you go on a vacation and you always come back just so refreshed. And, you know, that's kind of how it was. It carried over into the tournament. Like, you know, you're just in a better mood and you're more relaxed. And, you know, you sort of had that break where, you know, instead of beating your head in, Sung Jae Im practice. By the way, were you there, Stefan, when I asked the guy about the Sung Jae practice?
Yeah, we were talking about Brian working 8 to 4:30 every single day.
Yeah, and it's like, I love how it's just every day, including, you know, Mondays and missed cuts. Not that he ever misses a cut, of course.
Yeah, missed cuts. He's Saturday, then Sunday, same thing. It's insane.
Yeah, and off weeks and everything. It's like, this dude, it's just a job, period. Like he literally goes to the office and he does not leave before 4, which doesn't sound like a lot. Like, initially it's just like, oh, well, what's the big deal? Like 4 o'clock, like, you know, it's like, no, when you tee off at like 7 a.m. and you get there at 5 a.m. and then you play 18 holes, like 4 o'clock is a long way from when you step off the 18th hole at 11:45 a.m. and go in for lunch. Like, nope, he's back out there on the range just whacking balls. Like, the dude's a machine.
Absolute machine. And now we're into year two. You're a vet out there. And it's obvious it's going to be a little bit of different this year. I mean, I don't even know if you want to bring it up. You have a girlfriend now, which you obviously didn't really have last year. A little bit more travel, yeah, apart, and that whole aspect's being brought into it. What kind of impact do you see that having? Obviously, last week,
yeah,
you were,
I mean,
able to go see her after the missed cut.
Support,
a little bit of a win, I guess,
get
away from golf. But, you know, it's a whole,
I mean,
other
it's,
aspect
it's
of
just,
the PGA Tour.
It's just a lonely existence out there on the PGA Tour. I don't know if people realize it, but you know, as much as you get to, you know, hit on a hole 17 at Sawgrass in front of 50,000 people, you also spend like 90% of your time in a hotel room or on a plane or whatever. So, yeah, it's great to have her support and, you know, to be able to sort of have a life off the course too. It can be all consuming because obviously, like, it's such a great opportunity and, you know, it's a great job and everything, but it's nice to have that balance.
How are you going to adjust your schedule for the year? I mean, did you determine sort of that there was events that, you know, maybe the golf course didn't suit you, or there were, you know, you need more rest or something like that compared to certain stretches last year?
Yeah, I haven't figured out exactly what I'm going to do.
Does
I have
not
this
surprise
thing where,
me at all.
Yeah, I know, right? Fits into my personality. But, yeah, I mean, the schedule part, it's hard to pass up tournaments, I've
right.
always thought, because
yeah.
like I literally in 2014, like I would have just, I mean, I would have like done 3 Ironman triathlons in a row if you could just give me, like, you know, a coin flip opportunity to play a single opposite field tour event. You know, it's like I would have done anything to get into them. And so now that I have the opportunity to play, I feel like it's hard to pass up. But obviously you have to pace yourself, and you know, you can't be Sungjae. So, you know, you have to take some weeks off, and you know, I think I'm gonna play, you know, all the fall schedule, and then come, you know, the start of 2020, you know, I'll have to decide which events to take off. But yeah, there's a couple courses throughout the year that aren't great for bombers, like Colonial, Hilton Head, you know, courses like that are a little bit trickier if you're a bomber. It kind of takes away the innate advantage that you have. And so those would be the ones I'd consider taking off.
I didn't actually ask you, are you going to be in any of the events in Korea, Japan?
No, I'm not. I'm not playing the Asia ones. Yeah. So I'll just be doing pretty much the rest of the fall other than those three.
Yeah, so maybe we can have a couple weeks off there at least, which is nice. Maybe why don't you head back to France and get back into that vacation mode?
That's a great
again.
Idea. I am gonna do that. Thank you.
What was the best thing you liked in France? I mean, haven't never been. So what did you
never been?
No, obviously, you know.
What? And you call yourself a podcaster?
Sad, isn't it?
I mean, Paris is just. Is just incredible. I haven't been to, you know, some of the other, like, you know, Rome or, you know, London or some of the other sort of, you know, like most beautiful quote unquote cities in the world, but Paris is just so breathtaking when you're walking around. I mean, you can just walk around there all day, or if you're me, scooter around. Like, I've developed a very unhealthy relationship with scootering.
Oh,
and
no.
I just scooter everywhere.
That would look so weird. You're just such a big human.
Yeah, I'm very gangly, have poor balance, and I love to scooter.
It's definitely but... disaster written all over it.
Didn't Grant Snedeker like break his ribs on like a Segway or something? That's
I'm
be careful,
sure.
Man.
I mean, I'm definitely gonna do that too. Like, I will fall off a scooter at some point. But you know what? When you're in Paris, you just have to do it.
It's another way to get on the Golf Channel. We were joking about that on Friday. Like, hey. At least you're going to be on TV this week when Kevin was shooting that 59. The amount of texts I got after from my dad, like, just saw you on 10. Just saw you on 12.
Really?
Like, yeah, thanks.
Awesome.
Thanks, Daddy. I saw the camera there. It's all good, man. which is kind of funny transition into, you know, we talked about this on the putting green that they tend to try to humanize the PGA Tour a lot and all the potentially bad and lonely and not the greatest parts about it. And we don't often talk about the amazing parts about it. So like your first year out there, what parts are you just still shocked each week? Where you're like, wow, this is the life.
Besides seeing Jason Duffner, of course.
Well, Duff Daddy.
Well, I mean, seeing Duff Daddy was just the greatest moment of my life. But I would say the highlights were 17 at Sawgrass. That was just, I mean, it's just an absurd environment. Obviously, the, you know, the Island Green par 3 with the massive stands. I mean, it's basically like when the stands are as impressive as just like the actual golf hole. Like the stands are double deckers all the way around the hole. And there's just so many people. And there's just this massive screen where you're swinging a golf club and attempting not to hit in the water. It's insane. It's just insane.
Did you hit it?
I managed to keep it dry.
Nice.
But I did hit it into the bunker. This is probably the coolest moment of the year, I would say, is when I hit it barely over the water into the bunker when I was like on the cut line in round two. And then my bunker shot, which, you know, you would assume, okay, cool, bunker shot, like no big whoop. I proceeded to hit a little past the pin, and it trickled all the way to almost in the water. Because
wow.
If you're just on the edge of the green, you're innately almost in the water. And then from the fringe, I knocked it in from like 10 feet, and the crowd went wild. This is really awesome.
And the crowd goes wild.
That must that must be just a surreal moment. Just to if you can put yourself out of that situation and just go. You know, is this really happening? I mean, these people are cheering for me. I'm on the 17th green at Sawgrass. I mean, you know, like you said,
it's
in 2014, that, you know, you would have nearly died to make that happen, right?
Probably paid for a ticket to go in 2014.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's still just mind-boggling to think about, you know, and it's one, like, I always tell people there's almost like multiple PGA tours. There's the PGA Tour of, you know, you're a rookie and you tee off last on the back nine on Thursday. And it's just like, hey, welcome to the tour. And no one's watching. It's like you play your entire round. And you don't see a single human being until you get to, you know, hole number 18 or whatever. And then there's like the true sort of what you would think of as the PGA Tour with all the crowds and that, you know, happens at certain events or, you know, if you have a certain tee time, which you wouldn't have, you know, as a rookie or whatever. And once I shuffled into the winners category, I got to play at a lot of those time slots. And so, you know, I was coming up, you know, Friday afternoon at 17 at Sawgrass, you know, attempting to not shank it into the water in front of like a billion people. So that, I mean, that's, it's kind of a different sort of feel between the two.
I even saw the differences from the Canadian Open to the Greenbrier, right? Like, we had a guy shooting, if there was a guy shooting 59 in our group at the Canadian Open, there would have been, you know, 100 people following us, and we're out here at the Greenbrier and there was like 6 people, and then like the guy of the Clifton Forge Times was out there for the interview after. Like, there was just no one was really around.
Yeah, and it was funny, the build up too, because at the start of the round no one was there, and then when we got the back nine and he was like 6, 7, 8, 9 under, people were just like starting to gather, you know. And once you got to the end, there was a little crowd and or, you know, people had heard that he was on 59 watch or 58 watch.
Yeah.
Oh, it could have been 56 and at one point.
And there's probably 100,000 people now that'll say they were there, right?
Hello? Oh, there you are. Yeah.
No, for sure. I mean, it was a crazy experience.
What about perks out on the tour? Like, what's one perk each week where you're never, you know, it's never, you're never going to get used to it. You're just like, yeah, this is awesome.
The car. they give you a courtesy car every week, and you just show up at the airport and there's like a little booth, and you go up there and you tell them your name and they're like, oh, hello, and they all like, you know, want to meet you and shake your hand even though like they literally have never heard your name. And then they hand you the keys and you drive away in a car. I mean, that's the part that it's one of those convenience things.
It's like those commercials. They should do that for caddies, but it should be you have to have 4 people, and it's always like a 2005 Toyota Corolla.
I mean, hey, why not?
I think
I bet you caddies would. You know, caddies, I feel like, are really, really good at car Tetris, where, you know, even though they all have like 3 bags, they could fit it all into a Toyota Corolla along with 4 bodies. I bet you they would succeed.
Hey, man, that's easier than keeping some guy's head in the game for, you know, 72 holes. That's for sure. It's they're resourceful, those caddies. I like to pretend I am one. Nothing compared to those guys out there.
I mean, according to your Instagram, you are one, and I would say that makes it official.
It does. I've updated it. It's now PGA Tour caddy sometimes. It's not official. Man. We got no contracts been signed, but sometimes I might get a call.
Wow. I mean, that's an upgrade.
It's an upgrade. All thanks to you. What else is on your mind? Obviously, we're at the Sanderson Open. You got about a 4 or 5 week stretch here. Where what are you expecting this week? Are you feeling just as good as last week? What did you work on? I got nothing here. I'm just trying to get something out of you at this point.
Man, and that's why you're a pro.
Yep, this is a podcast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been working on the same stuff I've been working on. I feel like I can draw up on last week to hopefully have some good results. So we'll see. I mean, the next few events, you know, all I'm hoping for is to have, you know, a handful of really good rounds in there that, you know, I can really say, okay, like this was some good golf played. And you know, there's so much randomness in the game anyway that you can never sort of project how you're going to do. But you just know that if you did play well, hit good shots, then, you know, you're at least giving yourself a chance to make the cuts and maybe even do better than that. So that's my only goal moving forward. And this year's actually been fun for me. I had a couple guys that, you know, I played either, you know, junior or college or mini tour golf with that ended up getting their cards. And so those guys are out here now, and I feel like I have a little group of guys that I can hang with. So that part's kind of fun for me. But yeah, we'll see what happens.
Way less lonely that way. All right, last thing. One of the funnier moments for me of the week was after our first round, and just a step back, you've been on the Golf Channel before talking about this. You have this idea for a golf sitcom you want to write. And after your first round, obviously shooting 67 pretty good, all of a sudden this media member or something comes up to you and wants to know about every single episode that you've ever written so far. And I just heard you stumbling through trying to to get through this idea that's basically just an idea at this point, but she wanted the full synopsis of each individual episode.
Oh yeah. She was asking me about, you know, some of the characters I've developed. I'm like, I don't have any characters developed, but no, I mean, I sort of gave her the gist of it and some ideas that I had. And so, you know, I have come across some absolute characters in the golfing world. One of them is this caddy. His name is James Wesley McLaughlin. Okay. And he is this, probably, I don't know, 65, 70 year old caddy who's been caddying forever and just has the most ridiculous stories. And this guy, just the way that he talks, the stories that he has, you know, the R rating. Do you guys have R ratings in Canada?
Oh, like, yeah.
How do you?
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The R rating of all of his stories that he tells about, you know, these guys back in the day, you know, the Arnold Palmer days where he was caddying for these guys and they were just, you know, doing all sorts of crazy stuff. I mean, this guy was just a walking TV character. So I've saved every single voicemail he's ever left me because, of course, he leaves voicemails.
Oh, I'm like, leaving voicemails. He doesn't know how to text.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just leaves me voicemails.
And he's just so old that you can't even dispute it, right? Arnold Palmer's dead. Like, I mean, you can't call him up and be like, hey, Arnold, did
Mr.
McLaughlin ever caddy for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you can just make anything up. And you know what? I bet most of it is made up, but it doesn't matter. It's entertaining nonetheless.
Got it.
Yeah.
It's true. All right, man. Well, you're down in Mississippi this week, and then it's a home game next week. Going back to Napa, which you're going to take full advantage of, considering you drink absolutely zero wine. So if you get a bottle, feel free to ship that up to Canada. The studio gets real cold.
Well, you're my official receiver of free tour alcohol.
Very nice. That's a great designation to have.
I'll travel the entire world being not even caddying for you, just taking each bottle each week that you don't use.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
All right, buddy. Well, good luck this week. You know, we'll be watching. You're one of our favorites. Well, for a couple reasons. One, you pay me to, but also just because you're a great guy. So thanks for coming back on. We'll make sure to catch up with you probably at the Canadian Open, at least at the absolute latest. That's when we'll have you back on. That's for sure.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks to the boss, Martin Trainer, for coming on the podcast again. If you're wondering where he's at next, he's at the Sanderson Open this week down in Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi.
Are you practicing your accents now? You get your West Virginia accent, now you're getting your Mississippi accent? They're bad accents, by the way.
Yeah, any accent I do is going to be bad. But that course looks like an absolute dump. It does not look nice. It's not a PGA Tour course, in my opinion. Have you seen this golf course? Because there's really nothing special about it.
I have not played it, but you know what? People have to realize, and I think they've realized from the start, PGA Tour doesn't always play on the best golf course.
That's true.
They play on the venue that, you know, sponsors, logistics, all sorts of things take care of. It's not like they're out there playing on the, you know, the top 10 golf courses in the United States all the time. So it is what it is. And you know what? They're playing for a whole bunch of money, and I'm sure they're happy to do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one guy won a bunch last year, Cameron Champ. He won the tournament last year, and then you never really saw him after that. Kind of a interesting year. This guy, Martin and I were talking about that. This guy, he played with him in one tournament, and on the range, everybody, that's one thing about the PGA Tour, everyone looks very much the same on the range, and Martin is a long hitter, and he's like, this guy was bombing it past me 50
yards.
Yeah,
he's a different gear. We've talked, we had Noah Steele here on the podcast, and he played with him in college, and you know, obviously he's talked about how long he is. My big thing about this with Cameron Champ, and you know, that's part of the reason why I noted it in our notes this week, was the fact that when that tournament was on and he was winning it, everybody was, you know, I won't say everybody, a whole lot of people were going, oh, this guy's the next
coming. They're buying stock.
big time. And you know, they get all excited and they're, you know, I saw people, oh, how many tournaments is this guy going to win? He's going to win 30, 40 tournaments. He's got all the tools to do it and he's going to win majors. And it's like, whoa, just like settle down. There's no automatics. There are no automatics. He won this week. Be happy with that. He might have the potential to do more. That's great. But, you know, just settle down.
Yeah, and bomb. Just because you bomb it does not mean you're going to win every week.
No, definitely not.
Even on easier golf courses where you can, there's a lot of places to go. Yeah, that is kind of the strategy a lot of guys are seeing more and more on tour, which, in my opinion, does make golf a little bit boring at times. They hit it long, hit it as close as possible, and not actually think about your way around a golf course anymore. But, yeah, I don't know what to think about Cameron Champ. He's exciting to watch when he's on, but you don't get to see him much because nobody really watches the guy that's in T50.
No, and I mean, I understand. You know, he had some back issues, and that was part of the reason he withdrew after, I think, he shot 78 at Sawgrass after the opening round. But, you know, if we look at all the events he played for the rest of the year once he came back, 13 events, you know, he only had two finishes inside the top 50, and he had a whole bunch of missed cuts. So, you know, has this guy burned out? Is he done? I don't think so. He's still young. I mean, we can't all of a sudden jump on the bus and say, you know, he's over and he's a flash in the pan. He's only going to win one time. He's certainly got lots and lots of talent, but we're going to see how he can recover here. And maybe, you know, going back to the place where he won, maybe that'll give him a little bit of momentum. And that T21 he had in the Northern Trust was late in the season. So that showed some good signs as well.
That is true. The couple Canadians in the field as well. Corey Connors restarting his season. Kyle Peppers back on the bag. You know, they're back together this year. Nick Taylor in the field. A couple other Canadians in the field as well.
Yeah, David Hearn's in there. Michael Gligic, which, you know, you had managed to chat with him a little bit when you're down in West Virginia there. So, you know, as a rookie, he's getting his start. He missed the cut, unfortunately, his first one. And Adam Svensson, he Monday qualified. He actually ended up in a little bit of a playoff, shot 66 in the Monday qualifier, and then made a birdie on the first extra hole. So, five Canadians in the field. So, what were your thoughts on Gligic? I mean, that was your first time meeting him, right?
Yeah, we met him, ran into him on a putting green. Martin and him are good buddies. They played out on... who knows? Yeah, every tour probably together growing
probably,
up.
Probably, yeah.
I don't know.
I know they played in Canada. I think they would have been in Canada playing the
same
Martin
time. Only played a couple times out in Canada, but did maybe the Latino America.
Yeah, that was probably it. Yeah, and that's because that's where he played with Corey too,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. So, we chatted with him. He's really excited to get his year going. Obviously, limited status, that's always the biggest fear. I don't want to put words into his mouth, but we're working on getting him on the pod. We're in talks. Our people are talking to his people, aka I messaged him on Instagram. So we're in talks, and hopefully we can get him on soon to talk about that changeover. But, you know, you could just see, I know he didn't have the greatest week the first week, but you could just see the joy in his eyes. I can't quote him on this. He said, life is good out here. You know, there is a lot of good things. We often talk about, like, humanizing the PGA Tour, but there are a lot of things, as you heard from the podcast with Martin, there are a lot of things that aren't human. Like, you know, getting to an airport and having a car with the keys in it ready for you to go is not something the regular folk deal with. So it's awesome for Martin to kind of touch on those things.
There's the perks. I mean, we've talked a little bit. I think we've talked a little bit on the podcast before, but I know I've had that discussion with a number of people of you know, young guys that got out on the tour and some of the things they got to see. And Matt McQuillan, obviously Canadian, know him well. And I remember when he got out on tour and, you know, he was shocked that, you know, the dinner tickets obviously they get the vehicles and, you know, he had a chance to fly in an Air Force jet and there's lots of different perks that they get. You know, in the end, they're doing their job. So that doesn't last unless they start making cuts and
want to stay up there. That's for sure.
And make a lot of points out there.
But yeah, new season for some Canadians, which is awesome. And hopefully another Canadian, we hope to see him soon on the PGA Tour, but he is off to the Corn Ferry Tour or the Corn Tour or the Ferry Tour. They call it all sorts of, we were actually joking about that. Like, I believe Kevin Chappell's like, you know, when they got the rights, that was the time to change their business name because this is just such a weird name. But I don't know what Corn Ferry even does. I think there's some sort of HR program. Doesn't matter. He's on the Corn Ferry Tour now. Pendrith made his way onto the Corn Ferry Tour after finishing second, I believe, in the final, the Ord of Merit Merritt on the Mackenzie Tour.
Yeah, he did. The Mackenzie Tour wrapped up their season at London Highland with the Canada Life Championship this past week. And Taylor was right in there in the mix. He was just over $5,000 back of Paul Bargeon from France.
Which is like two first place out there.
Well, I won't say that, but, you know, he had won in, Taylor had won in Montreal, and then, you know, he obviously had an opportunity. Didn't play as well as he hoped. He was dealing with a shoulder injury there, but, you know, the consolation prize is that one, he was the Canada Life Canadian Player of the Year for the Tour for the year.
A little bit of cash.
Picked
for
up
that.
$25,000 yeah, for that, which, do. Yeah, he won a weekly prize for that as well, six times during the year. Got the second spot. Unfortunately, with that tour, number one spot gets fully exempt onto the Corn Ferry Tour in their order of merit, which went to Paul Bargeon. And then, unfortunately, Taylor now will have to deal with limited status. But that said, two through five are the players that get limited status. I went back and looked at it. I don't have that note with me. I did look at it for last year, and those players combined did get well over 100 starts for the five players. So, you know, it used to be that the two through five players having conditional status, they wouldn't get many starts, but, you know, it looks like, you know, that's been solved a little bit. And two of those players that I think were in the five last year are now PGA Tour members. So it's certainly a nice step for him to get on there and to get back to the Corn Ferry Tour. And hopefully, you know, he can stay healthy.
Sanjay M heard you say 100 starts, and he was like, sign me up. Where do I go? Yeah. Where do I go? 100 starts? I'm all for that.
You know, you think about that. I mean, if you got your tour card and you got out there, I mean, I know you're going to be tired, but would you not want to play as many times as you can?
I think it is tiring. Like, I mean,
oh, yeah.
We see
it now, right?
Yeah. Like, I overheard the conversation with his caddy. Like, I guess Sanjay M, this guy works harder than everyone. That's what Martin said he was known for on the Corn Ferry Tour. He, every single day, 8 o'clock to 4:30, every day, full eight and a half hour day, regardless of its pro-am day, practice round day, yep. Regardless of it's a playing day, puts in a full 8 hour day every single day. And that's how you end up at the Tour Championship like he did. Like, he works hard. And
yeah, he didn't get a win, but, you know, he ended up being the rookie of the year, even though a bunch of other players like Martin had a win.
Yeah, I think Martin just narrowly missed the rookie of the year. We joked about that.
He didn't. He wasn't even in the nominations.
No, not even close. Not even close. Good for Sanjay. I've already joked enough about him today. Guy can play, that's for sure. Couple other things, noteworthy things. Golf Digest posted an interesting article that's taking a little bit of heat online. Seven tour players in desperate need of an equipment makeover. First one on the list, and this one's an absolute joke. I apologize.
Henrik Stenson. Seriously.
So they're saying, get rid of this three wood. This guy hits his three wood better than anybody hits a three wood in the world, and he's got those old 2005 Legacy irons,
Diablo irons,
like, who knows, either whatever they are. And I think he was first in strokes gained approach last year, so no, he doesn't need to switch his clubs. I think he'll be just fine. Yeah.
I'm an equipment geek like the rest of the people. I like to have new equipment, but you need equipment that works. Mm-hmm. And I have all the respect in the world for Michael Johnson, who did this article, but I don't know if he got pushed to do some things on it. I mean, maybe if they framed it out and said, here's some players playing some old equipment, that's fine, you know, if you want to know what's in their bag. But to say they need a makeover,
it's all about clicks, baby.
I guess. But I mean, you know, if I'm Stenson, I mean, I'm playing that three wood until it is dead. And I mean, to, you know, whatever.
How many does he have, right? Because, like, they must have broken, faces cracked. Like, he plays a lot of golf, and it's, I don't know when the the Diablo Octane 3 wood came out, maybe 2008,
I think.
Sure.
That one, yeah.
I'll give you that, whatever. And he's got a shaft in there that dates back, like, 2003, I believe.
Yep.
Graphite
blue, but yeah. it works. So yeah, he might have some extra backups to it, and hey, he might be able to jump on eBay and get a backup head for $15. And that said, you know, it's obviously a tour head or whatever.
It's got like a Sky Marks on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. But you know what? He'd probably play it anyway. So it's about function, and I've talked to players before about that. You know, there's more money available on the tour by playing well than just for equipment contracts.
You make no money anymore. It doesn't matter. It's not what it used to be.
also just because you're excited and think these guys need makeovers, I mean, that's a lesson for most amateurs that they should realize is that just jumping to the next new club, and sorry, manufacturers, that's just the way it is, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to play better. But if you're playing well with a club, you know, unless it's defective or is damaging in some way, I mean, ride it.
Exactly. Bubba Watson was another guy on this list with those S55 irons. You know what? Like, those irons are one of the best irons I've ever played in my life.
Yeah,
I love those.
Nothing wrong with them.
Why would you change? I hate to break it to you. They're just a small cavity blade, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
You know, they Ping's made changes. I haven't mentioned this in a long time. I used to be the fitter of the year for Ping. I don't know if you heard about it. 2014, not
a
big deal.
I think you heard about 25 episodes ago.
Yeah. I made it 25 episodes without bringing it up. So that's kind of a big deal. I've seen them all from there. They're all very similar.
Yeah. I mean, they're well-engineered products. They're going to get the job done. You start looking through all those players, Lexi Thompson, Fred Couples. They're talking about Steve Stricker. I mean, they have to realize that even the clubs that Steve Stricker's got, the 755 irons, he does have multiple sets of them. They were made for him so that they had legal grooves, even though they are of that age. You know, if he's comfortable with them, looks down, likes the look of them, likes the feel, it's dependable. He likes seeing the ball flight, and he knows where it's going to go. Why do you want to change that?
You're 100% right. I mean, but we all like new things.
Oh, we do.
It's exciting.
But
we're going to talk about the new equipment.
Don't force it on them.
So don't, you know, when we come out with a new episode in, say, January, we're like, ooh, did you see Ricky Fowler's now going to Titleist? This is not happening. I'm not an insider,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you can't come back here, but. Yeah,
I mean, that's it. I just finished doing, we talked about the iron article that I was working on. I just did an article on the late season releases, whatever. There's some great attributes to those products. Some people will obviously put them in their bag because they're better than what they have. They have features that they want that their current clubs, you know, don't have. But in essence, these players have what they want. They have what they need. They get what they need out of it for a ball flight performance. They're all top players making lots and lots of cash. I don't think, you know, they're guaranteed to make that much more just because they change out their three wood.
I agree with you 100%. And also, I think the funnier part about this article is at the end of it, they start talking about guys like Brandel Chambly. So clearly we're just looking for some clicks here.
Yeah,
sadly. Doesn't really matter. I think it's a good time to wrap things up before we get into too much Brandel Chambly talk for me.
That could go for a while, right?
Yeah, we don't need to give this guy any more publicity. But good pod this week. Thanks to Martin Train for coming on. We got the Sanderson Open this week. Hopefully he does well. It is an open, right?
Sanderson Championship.
Championship.
That's okay. Sanderson sure. Tournament.
Yeah, the Sanderson. Let's just call it the Sanderson.
You know what? Sponsor got their name in there. They're happy.
Yeah, Sanderson. Well, don't even call it tournament. Just,
yeah, sure.
Hey, we're going to Sanderson. And then they just play a tournament. Sure. That's what the fans come here for. Is
I'm
this
sure.
type of content.
100%.
That's going on. Anything else going on this week? It's fall golf. Are you ready for fall golf? Because I witnessed a 59, as I mentioned the other day in person. I personally shot a 49 on the front nine of a tournament. So I'm not ready for not a tournament, just a regular round. I'm not ready for fall golf. Are you ready for fall golf?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to a scramble season, get a few that I'm lining up to play in the next little while. So and, you know, my daughter's playing a little bit too. School golf is on right now, so I've been playing a little bit with her. So hopefully.
Yeah, swing's looking good.
Yeah, not bad. I had a few comments on that.
Yeah,
but,
swing's looking
not
good.
Not bad for a little lefty.
Must have found a new teacher.
Probably.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, fall golf's around the corner. We've been teasing it for a bit. We're going to have some good where to go this winter. Where should you go when you need to get out of the snow and head down south to play some golf? But while we're here, why don't we enjoy fall golf in our country? So we're going to have some good conversations about that coming up as well, and where to go in Ontario and around, because there's some great gems in the fall to play. I think it's a good time to wrap it up right there. Thank you again to Martin Trainer for coming on. And for everyone for listening, remember to subscribe, rate us 5 stars, 5 stars only, and leave us a comment. We're still waiting for some feedback. I believe it's just my mom that keeps commenting every single week saying, I love the podcast. They're both really good.
You know what? I keep running into people more and more all the time. We do have listeners now in 42 countries. So there are people out there listening. We really, really appreciate that. And, you know, just running into people and they're saying, hey, I like this guest or that guest. So that's nice to hear. So, you know, if you can post some of that online and maybe at iTunes or Spotify and help us out with a little review, we'd appreciate it.
All right. Well, that's great. We'll see y'all next week. Lost in the